better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So I finished watching Outer Banks this weekend, and for those who don't know what that is, a lot of our older listeners probably don't need to watch it because it's terrible. It's this teen drama, this high school drama, cliche, crappy, whatever, pick an adjective, you can associate it with Outer Banks. But the reason I kept on watching Outer Banks, the sole reason I kept on watching Outer Banks, was the character Sarah Cameron, who is played by Madeline Klein, just did an extremely beautiful character. And I kept finding myself like, this show is terrible. This show sucks. But I kept on watching it regardless of what my friend said. And I had several friends that did the exact same thing for the sole purpose of continuing to watch Sarah Cameron. And last year and the year before, you continued to watch Arkansas football despite it being horrific, despite it being horrendous, despite it bringing pain to you every single week. But there was really one person more last year than the year before that was captivating, that you were excited to watch every single Saturday. And that one person was Rakeem Boyd. And I just don't understand how this guy didn't get as many touches last year as he did. Now, we're going to hear from a bunch of different people on Rakeem Boyd, where he ranks in the SEC, and so on. But there are similarities between Rakeem Boyd and Sarah Cameron, the character in Outer Banks. The rest of the team, and really just the overall show and everything, sucked, which is what you could say about Arkansas football last year. But you kept on watching anyway because of one particular person. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. We are always streaming live on hitthatline.com. You can find our video stream, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. Find us on the TuneIn app as well. Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, is going to be joining us this morning at 7 o'clock. And then we are also going to have Broderick Green, former Arkansas Razorback, joining us at 8 o'clock, the newest running backs and assistant coach at Central Junior High, Springdale Harbor's Junior High School. Tommy, is that a good illustration? I finally finished it this weekend. I know you've seen it. Good, bad, fair, foul?
I'd say particularly your analogy about Outer Banks, or your testimony there about it's pretty accurate. I ended up watching the whole thing, and it's not that long a series, was it? If I remember, 14 episodes or something. It's been a few weeks, but it wasn't the most painful binge ever. But you're right, there was some scenery that kept you tuned in. What was the scenery last year with Razorback football for the last few years? But you couldn't turn away. So,
and that's exactly what it was. And maybe you say, well, it wasn't Rakeem Boyd for me. It was Treylon Burks. Maybe it was Trey Knox. But it wasn't like a lot. It wasn't just this overwhelming, I'm going to tune in to watch the entire team play because there's so many different players that stand out to me that I really want to watch. No, it was one, two, maybe three players that you tuned in for every single week. And that's the similarity between Outer Banks and this. It's like, I didn't watch this show for basically anything else outside of Sarah Cameron. And I found myself texting my friends, this show is horrid. How am I still watching this? And yet I continue to do it regardless. I mean, if you look at Rakeem Boyd, Tommy, SEC Network analyst Cole Kublik said he's the third best running back in the SEC. This is a guy that had over 1,100 yards last season, 8 touchdowns. He said that his body's looked as good as it ever has, but you just didn't get him a football enough. Go back to Western Kentucky. I posted a highlight yesterday of him running for 76 yards in the opening of that football game. Tommy, he had 8 attempts in that game for 185 yards, and you still didn't get him the ball enough. Only 2 games last season did he have 20 or more carries. He had 6.2 yards per carry. This was a guy that was a force when he got
only
the football,
2 games,
and yet he didn't get the football enough.
Well, you know, it just made you wonder a lot of things from a play calling, management. What I mean, Have we still ever determined the last two seasons of Arkansas football what they were trying to do offensively? I mean, really, what the goal, what the accomplishment was. We've talked about running backs and the wide receivers, and you talk about Raheem Boyd's ranking here with Cole, but we've talked about the wide receivers not getting the ball. Are we ever really sure what the plan was, whether it was Raheem Boyd or anybody else in that offense, the musical chairs with the quarterback position? Seemed like there was no plan from the get-go.
It didn't have anything going, yeah. It was one of those things where you expected, and I know the clip of Chad Morris talking with who's the Razorback Sport Network broadcast, Brett Dolan. You have that interview with him. This is going to be one of the most explosive offenses in the country. You've heard that. I know you've watched that over and over again. It just didn't end up being. And you could say, well, they didn't have an offensive line. The quarterback didn't pan out. You didn't give Raheem Boyd enough touches. They didn't throw the ball enough to Treylon Burks and Trey Knox. There are so many different little finite points that you can point to and say, this is why the offense didn't take off. But I think the one and the matter we're bringing up this morning is it's sometimes, again, the answer is sometimes simple. Get the ball to your playmakers. It is unacceptable for Raheem Boyd not to have touches. Only two games last season with 20 or more touches. Tommy, to me, that's just inexcusable, man. Inexcusable.
Yeah. I mean, because clearly, who are your best weapons? If you had to make a list, top three offensive weapons last year, who would they be? Boyd's certainly one of those three, right?
Absolutely.
Burks, Knox, I mean, would be probably my three. And it seemed like they just didn't have a plan on how to get the ball to those guys. And you could sit here and say, well, it's because the quarterback play was so atrocious. Well, there's some of that, but at the end of the day, it's your job as a coach to figure it out.
No, and 100%. I think when you look at what they had last year, you got to be able to get more of what. Now, it wasn't the same level of atrocity what the defense was, giving up the amount of yards, giving up, I think, the fifth or sixth most points per game in all of college football, the worst in Power 5. But no one, when Chad Morris came in, expected the defense to just be LSU or Alabama-esque. Now, they expected the offense to put up numbers, and numbers they did not put up since arriving in Arkansas. That was one of just, again, a puzzling type of or a puzzling part of the whole Chad Morris equation is, dude, what happened? Why didn't the offense get going? And the playmaker aspect that you're pointing to, Tommy, is just, it's very simple. He just didn't get him to enough. And I know we've harped on this before, but when you see stuff like Raheem Boyd, when you hear the statistic that I laid out that he only got 20 plus carries twice all last season, when you hear that Treylon Burks didn't have a touchdown last year, when you hear that Trey Knox was really not targeted down the stretch of the season, it's mind-blowing, man. It's mind-boggling. And you and I, we don't pretend to be this offensive guru, offensive savant when it comes to the game of college football, but I think any Joe Blow can point out, oh, this guy runs a 4-4, get him the football. This guy's 6'5", throw it to him in the red zone. I mean, that's just simple stuff, dude.
Yeah, doesn't seem like it takes much to figure that part of it out. I mean, sometimes isn't it frustrating when things seem to be so obvious from the TV or from the stands or from a 30,000-foot view, but those going through it right there can't ever seem to figure out how to make the connection? It's one of the more frustrating things in sports.
No, absolutely. I think when you look at just the how frustrating it was to be an Arkansas fan last year, you can point to so many different things. You can point to the fact that the defense was one of the worst in college football, the worst in Power 5. You could point to the quarterback play that you thought you were told all offseason long, oh, it's going to be 9-day, it's going to be so much better, and it wasn't. You could make the case it was worse. You could point to, well, you're just not getting your dudes the football. You got to get your playmakers the football. There are so many different characteristics of the Chad Morris era that you can point to, as you mentioned, Tommy, as frustrating. And time and time again, unfortunately, those come back to haunt you. I don't think those memories are going to go away anytime soon unless Sam Pittman really gets this thing turned around quick.
You can't imagine they went into the game with those plans last year and then just lost their plan during the game. Had to have been that way.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act.
Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
This is reporting from Adam Schefter over the weekend that Dallas Cowboy quarterback Dak Prescott is expected to sign a $31.4 million exclusive franchise tender by today. So all you Dallas Cowboy fans listening, that looks like a deal is about to get done, and it looks like it's going to be cheaper than a lot of people anticipated.
Jenkins, what do you think about that? They finally agree on a number. What do you think about that? You're the big Cowboys guy.
It is what it is. I was kind of getting put off with it just because of everything happening with it. I mean, it was irritating just with everything.
What was the biggest offer he turned down?
I think it was close to 40-something million. But I think the hang-up from what I read, it was between Adam Schefter and different media people, was that I think the Cowboys were wanting to put him on a 5-year deal and Prescott wanted a 4-year deal, which I don't know what the difference is in that. I mean, it's another year. But I think to me, kind of how this reads to me is that it just puts a Band-Aid on it and then we'll deal with it next offseason. Because the franchise tag, if I'm not mistaken, is just a 1-year deal, I believe.
Right,
but he's a good quarterback, talented offense.
Is he a great quarterback? Is he great or is he good?
He stumbled, so that's a no.
Patrick Mahomes is great.
What I was going to say was, like, where are we drawing the line at, like, great quarterback?
To me, greatness is top 10 or so percent of anything, right? Well, you get past about 3 or 4 starting quarterbacks and you're outside of the top 10% of your league. So greatness has to end, to me, somewhere around 3. We hand out that tag too much. And I don't know if he's a top 3 quarterback in the league or not.
No, he's nowhere. I would say he's top 10. I wouldn't say he's top 5, though.
By the label that you just said, Tommy, if you're putting it, he is not a top 3 quarterback in the NFL. No, but if you want to say top 10, Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback. But while you're saying, if you're saying greatness only belongs in the top 3 category because that is 10% of the league's 30 teams, 3 quarterbacks, 32 teams, sorry. He does not belong in that conversation.
It'll get better. I mean, with Mike McCarthy coming in and new offense, and obviously Ezekiel Elliott is easily a top 3 running back in the league, if not the best back in the league.
That is a conversation you're okay with having, and I'm okay with that because it's true.
I think where Dak Prescott can find success is almost kind of like they did during his rookie year when Dak was making the easy throw.
You mean when no one had any film on him whatsoever?
Well, I mean, fair, but I mean, look at how successful they were that rookie year.
Yeah.
And then you're right. I mean, they got film, and then things changed, and you had a very rookie head coach one who coached like a rookie.
He had only been there, what,
it was Jason Garrett. It was Jason Garrett's fault. So it sounds like you're saying. Mm. So if he doesn't have success this year under Mike McCarthy, where are you going to point the blame to then?
At him.
Okay. All right. Well.
You got to mark it down. No, I mean, I'm serious. And I've said to parents and friends and everything that, who's the quarterback? I blanked. Who's the quarterback they signed in the offseason? Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is no top 10 quarterback, but if for some reason Dak gets hurt but at this point when the contract kept dragging on and nothing was getting signed, it's Andy Dalton is better than any other backup you could, or any other quarterback that was available at the time. Yeah, yeah, you could go out and get Cam Newton, but I don't know.
This will be a big year. It's about 10% of your starter.
Yeah, this will be a big year for Dak if he's worth the salt that he demanded. So
that's fair. All right. Yeah, but that was important news that I know we have a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans listening. So I wanted to get into that as well. Big news from Adam Schefter. So we talked about Athlon Sports last week, the comments made by an anonymous SEC coach pertaining to Arkansas football, where one of them said that they've got no personnel. Their roster looks like NCAA sanctions hit them. And Tommy, this is a head coach speaking. Athlon's pretty reliable. They're not going to share who it actually was, but this is a head coach talking about Arkansas's football team. And I know we had this conversation last week, and Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South was talking about this. When you look at what Arkansas's had, it's easy to bash Arkansas. 19 consecutive SEC losses. You have one conference win the past 3 years on the road against Ole Miss in 2017. So, Tommy, it's really easy to pile on the Razorbacks at this point. Whether you look at the roster, whether you look at the current history, it's an easy thing to fall into if you're a college football analyst to make fun of the Hogs based on where the current state of the program is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you make the statement, though, I think where your head is, you know, they don't have any players, don't have any personnel. I don't think you're diving deep into that. It's just you look on the surface at the record with, you know, if they don't win a game this year, it would be, what, 27 consecutive SEC losses if they don't win one this year? So, I mean, Arkansas is an easy mark for criticism right now, but I think if you look at some of the moves, listen, we're not sitting here saying Arkansas is poised to really make a run in the West or anything, but offensively at least. Now, I think on defense, there's a few more question marks. They haven't done quite as many maneuvers bringing in players. Xavier Kelly's probably the best amongst them. And we'll talk about some of this with Clay when he joins us in the next hour. I think there are some players. When you look at a Felipe Franks coming in, the return of your wide receivers, and Rakeem Boyd, who we talked about to lead the show as a top 4 or 5 running back in the league, there are some parts and pieces there to offensively make this team at least interesting.
Yeah, and if you didn't listen to our first segment, SEC Network analyst Cole Kublik listed Rakeem Boyd as the number 3 running back in the SEC, only behind Kylan Hill at Mississippi State and Najee Harris at Alabama. So a lot of respect being given to Rakeem Boyd early on this season. Athlon Sports named him second team All-SEC. Yeah. So.
Who did the coordinator deal that we spent
Michael
two
Bratton.
Shows? Okay, I wish someone would do this. Give me the rank of, like Cole gave you the list of running backs, right? Couple that with the list of offensive lines and then come up with a composite. And I think that would be an interesting study to see, all right, you got a great running back, but don't you really need a good offensive line to go with it, kind of like they did offensive and defensive coordinators? To me, that would be an interesting tell. Who's got the best running backs with the best offensive lines?
Because not to say the offensive line, not to say the running back is worthless without a good offensive line, but we saw last year, as good as Rakeem Boyd looked like he could be, he could have been that much better with a solidified offensive line. And when you think about the personnel aspect of the conversation we're talking about, that an anonymous SEC coach said, oh, this team has no personnel. Well, Connor pointed out, guys, Felipe Franks, he won a New Year's Six Bowl as a starting quarterback. Rakeem Boyd, Trey Knox, who's already been ranked as a first-round draft pick by Walter Football in 2022. There are guys on this roster that you can look to and say, this guy's a player. But if you're just going to throw a blanket statement, Tommy, on the Razorbacks, oh, they don't have anyone because of their record, 2-10, 2-10, the past two seasons, that's an easy statement to make. It's the easy cop-out answer to say, well, there's no talent on this roster. But if you actually dive into it, which Clay and so many others that cover Razorback football can do a lot better than us, there's actually talent here. It's just a matter of now you got to have a coach. Like, you think about the Jimmy and Joe's aspect. I was reading an article by Trey Beatty of Hog Sports. He was talking about, you know, the phrase, it's not just about the X's and O's, it's about the Jimmys and Joes. Well, it's also about the X's and O's, too. You have to have a good football coach, and you have to have good players. Yes, Nick Saban gets some of the best, if not the best, talent every single year. But the guy's not a slouch in coaching football, either. Now, the Sam Pittman's not going to mount to Nick Saban or anything like that. But there's reasons you can point to coaches across college football or college basketball that don't pull in top 30, top 25 recruiting classes, and yet they still have a perennial top 25 team every single year because they're a darn good football coach and they pick out the talent that's needed. But Arkansas does have talent on this roster. You're just also going to have to take this talent that's not as highly coveted by some other schools and also turn that into SEC-level competition as well.
What you got to count on is the coaches to develop the players and to make them better in November than they are in September. That's what's got to happen, is this staff that Pittman's put together has to be developers of talent. That's what we haven't seen the last couple of years, is a team that, You really look at it. Give me the list of players that greatly improved from the beginning to the end of the year. And that's where this team's got to make the biggest jump is, all right, you start out and you are what you are, but by November, you know, are you a different football team with some swagger, with some confidence, because you're making plays and you've improved and coached those players? There's some real question about how much coaching the players were getting during the year under Chad Morris.
you mentioned development, Tommy. That's what Barry Odom is really known for in his time in Missouri and his time in Memphis. He takes less heralded guys from wherever and turns them into good football players. And as the head coach of the University of Arkansas, as the offensive coordinator at the University of Arkansas, the DC, the running backs coach, whatever, you're always going to have to play with less talented guys. Not to say they aren't talented to begin with, but you will have talent on that roster that isn't necessarily stacking up to the other talent that you play week in, week out in the SEC. So what you have to do, as you mentioned, is be a fantastic developer of that talent. Luckily, when you hired me, I already had a lot of talent. You didn't really have to do much development. It was just natural. Yeah. But for Arkansas and Sam Pittman, Barry Odom and Kendall Briles, they have to turn in guys like the pearl to a diamond. Like it doesn't look like much at first, but you have to make it something. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of effort and energy that some guys, some coaches across college football, they don't have to put as much into. Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, USC back in the day, they just showed up on campus. You're good to go, basically. Not for everyone, but it was a lot easier. Yeah. You got to put a lot more time and effort to developing these kids than other schools, other blue blood schools across college football.
Yeah, let's just hope Felipe Franks makes Kendall Briles' job as easy as you've made mine. Let's just hope that is the case.
Yeah, so. I would hope that's the case. I don't think it's going to be the case, but I would hope that's the case. But in all seriousness, yes, Tommy actually has had some help in developing me. I know a lot of people think that I'm just as naturally as talented as I came when I entered this position, but Tommy has actually helped me get to where I am today. And when you look at what Kendall Briles and Barry Odom have had to do, I think that, Tommy, if you had to judge one or the other between Odom's difficulty and Briles' difficulty, I think that Kendall probably inherits a little more on offense than Odom does on defense, so that's going to make his job more difficult.
Is it even close, really? I mean, just to pause on that phrase, is it really even close what Briles inherits versus what Odom inherits? I want to ask Clay that, too, because I don't think it's even close. In my opinion, I don't think it's even close.
I would say to the untrained, non-coach, general knowledge, college football eye like myself, I would say yes. Now, I could be vastly wrong. Maybe there's diamonds all over the place on the defense that we just don't know about because they weren't coached up last year. But I'm kind of with you in the statement that it looks like that Kendall Briles is going to inherit a lot more than what Barry Odom does on defense. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, look at that. Most of it, I got to go back and look at the 2019 recruiting class, but the majority of the highly recruited players were those on offense, right? I know you had Jalen Catalon and you had Devin Bush, who were both four-stars, but, I mean, you had four-star wide receivers, Shamar Nass, TQ Jackson, who's now at SMU, Treylon Burks, Trey Knox. I felt like more the offensive side was where you picked up the higher rated players. And that leads me to believe, Tommy, like yourself, that there's more talent on the offensive side that Kendall Briles gets to play with.
Yeah. To me, for that to even be a conversation for this year, you've got to have a Xavier Kelly that's better than you thought coming in from Clemson, the grad transfer, and you got to have a healthy Dorian Gerald. See, you got to start up front. I mean, to me, that's where that conversation. If you can't put a check mark by those two, as far as they're going to be SEC caliber players on the front line, it's going to be difficult to come up with any other conclusion than what we're saying here from the armchair quarterback spot.
No, I agree, man. I agree with that as far as that goes. And look at the incoming grad transfers, Tommy. A.J. Reed's a kicker. You got Felipe Franks as the quarterback. Levi Draper. Jerry. So you got three defensive players, one special teams, and one offensive players. I'm doing that right. Jerry Jacobs, Xavier Kelly, Levi Draper. Yeah, three defensive players, one offensive player, one special team. So maybe those additions might make the conversation a little more compelling. But still, even with those guys, I still think that the offense is far ahead as far as what Kendall Briles inherits compared to Barry Odom.
I agree. And to me, it's because of the guy we talked about to start the show and Rakeem Boyd. And then you couple that with the wide receivers that we know, just the eye test, they have the talent. They were just underutilized last year. And the quarterback spot was so shaky they couldn't get the ball to them. But we know Burks and Knox and Woods and those guys are going to be really good out there. Certainly have the potential to be really good. So I think that's why we think the offense is in that category so far ahead of the defense, is because of the guys that, you know, you got to give Chad Morris credit. He recruited those guys.
And when you look at the John Chavis and Barry Odom comparison, this is one of the things that I said when John Chavis was hired, because we talked to Matt Moscona, we talked to Billy Lucci, we talked to Gabe Bach. Two of those guys work for Texags in College Station. Other guy works for ESPN 104.5 in Baton Rouge. John Chavis was a good coordinator at those spots, as well as Tennessee. But, Tommy, he wasn't a developer. He could just suck in talent for whatever, because it was College Station in Texas A&M. It was LSU in Baton Rouge. There's talent fluttering all throughout Louisiana and Texas. There's not so much in Arkansas. John Chavis, for many reasons, one, he didn't adjust to the spread offense. He was never able to do that. Mm-hmm. And two, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know if John Chavis, maybe in his early years, that would have been more of a characterization, but I can't think lately in the last couple of years that he was just this huge developer of talent. That wasn't a moniker associated with John Chavis, but you pointed out time and time again, and so many other college football analysts have pointed out, that Barry Odom is a developer, and that key word is essential if you're going to coach at the University of Arkansas. You can't just be a good football coach who is good at bringing in 4 or 5 stints or high-end 3 stars and then just coaching them, not necessarily coaching them up, but they're pretty good. Like, they just come on campus, and they're pretty solid. Now, there is coaching that's applicable with every single kid that arrives on campus, some more than others, but if you're not able to be a developer of men, not only on the field but off the field, you're not going to have success at Arkansas, period.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see defensively, because we always talk about line of scrimmage league. What can Coach LeBlanc do up front with those guys? How much development can it take there? Because to me, that's where Arkansas has not been able to match up with other SEC teams. Arkansas's defensive line hasn't been able to get much done against the O-lines of the powers in the West. How much development, how much better can a D-line be? They need more depth, but they got to get the players they got playing at a higher level. Faster motors.
Yeah, when you think
that to me is the most critical thing about the defense is what can the guy that made Kentucky look like a bunch of all-stars up front, what can he do for Arkansas?
Because they were getting just slaughtered these last couple mm-hmm. years, not only yeah. 2 years under Chad Morris, but under Brett Bielema as well. You give up 50-something points, and everyone would just be sick to their stomach, throw it up in the stands, not just for the alcohol poisoning, but for other stuff as well. You'd just be just horrified for what you saw on the football field. Yes, the offense was terrible, but the defense just laid down time and time again. Need some fire back in this football team. I've actually, and we'll get into this conversation more coming up in the program, but I've spoken to a few Arkansas players currently on the roster, and they tell me they're really all in on Sam Pittman. And you heard from several of them, whether it was privately, whether it was on social media, that Chad Morris really lost that locker room, which is terrible. And Arkansas these last couple years has been an absolute dumpster fire. So you have to create a belief, not only in the locker room, throughout the fan base, throughout the donors. Like, there has to be a belief that this football team is going to be good again. And in the current state of the world, in the circumstances we're facing with COVID-19, the bleakness only amplifies. It's not just for Arkansas football. You're not just sad about Arkansas football. You're sad about racial tensions going on right now in the world. There's so many other things outside of just the football team that you're thinking, man, this is terrible right now. I can't believe we're having to go through this. That's why you need a beacon of light. You need a beacon of hope. You need something to take your mind off what is going on right now, something to bring you together rather than tear you apart. And not a great football team, but a football team at the University of Arkansas that at least looks like it's getting back on track into some form of relevancy in the Southeastern Conference, that you can taste it again, that you can experience it again. It doesn't have to be a bowl game. It doesn't have to be wins over Alabama and LSU. It just needs to be something tangible that you can point to and say, this looks like it's going to get back on the right track.
You know, I've talked about how the losses go. You know, it's one thing to get beat. It's a whole other thing to lose 53-3. You know, that's another part of this equation to me that, you know, a loss is not just a loss. Sometimes wins by one or wins by 21 can feel the same depending on the opponent. But I'm telling you, there's a huge difference, Ty, in how you go about losing games. Do you still have your gloves up in the fourth quarter? Were you ever in it in the second half? Arkansas's had too many games lately. That's another big part of this equation with Pittman and his staff and what the defense can do to just stop the other team from having their way with you. There's going to be days where the defenses in this SEC are so tough, you're not going to score a lot of points. It's just the reality of playing in this league. What's your defense doing in the second half? Even in games you're going to get beat, do they hold on to the rope and let you stay in the game, or do they let go of the rope and you get embarrassed? Too many times Arkansas has been embarrassed over the last, really, 5 years or so.
Eric in Hot Springs texts in, Morris didn't help with the defense. Hopefully Odom can coach these guys he has, and we'll see a difference in that defense. Tommy, you bring up the just getting clobbered conversation. It's not that is a conversation that needs to be had, but you also don't want to get back to the Brett Bielema era where you keep on saying, oh, we're so close. We're so close. Because time and time again, under Brett Bielema, Arkansas would lose by a touchdown or a field goal or a missed extra point, and he just continually stated the same statement. We're close. We're close. Yes, you don't want to get blown out. You want to have some respectability on that field, but you also want to, you don't want to be venturing back into the conversation of mediocrity where you consistently lose tight ball games. You have to somehow, some way, get over the hump. Now, I'm not talking you're going to have just like you're going to win every single close ball game this season, but there needs to be some signs of significance of change. It doesn't need, as you mentioned, yes, you don't want Arkansas to get blown out. You also don't want to lose five games by a touchdown or less this year, which seemed like it happened every single year of Brett Bielema's tenure. And that's not an accurate statement. That's more of just a joke. But it was one of those things where Brett Bielema's team were so close so often, and you kept hearing the exact same rhetoric, and it was tiresome.
But you take that in year one under Pittman. I mean, to be in ball games, you could see a blueprint and a map. It was year three and four, you know, where you were hearing Brett say, we're close, and he just got fatigued by it. In year one, and we're talking about the initial outset of Pittman, you'd absolutely just like to be in some of them games with Auburn and LSU and Alabama. And that's just because that's where you're at as a program right now. You don't have the depth chart. You don't have the talent to really go toe-to-toe with them week in, week out.
But you want to be able to win one, maybe two, not lose, go 0-for-5 in touchdown or ball games or less. That's what we can't get back to.
And that's as much mental as it is physical.
100%.
Ryan Mallett back in the game. Ball spotted on the 1 yard line. Roderick Green. Oh, my! Across the 50. Feet. This will be 99 yards. It's a record here in Fayetteville. Broderick Green will never have a longer run in his career. 99 yards.
This is Broderick Green, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome back into The Morning Rush, hour number three. Going to the phone lines, where we're bringing in former Razorback and current Harbor Junior High running backs coach Broderick Green now joins us on The Morning Rush. Broderick, good morning. You hear that highlight coming in, 99 yards on that touchdown. Do you remember what play call that was, man?
Oh, of course, man. I'll never forget it.
What did Coach Petrino call and Coach Paul Petrino call in that play that day?
They called a inside zone out of an eye formation. We always practiced it coming out of the goal line, and we always did goal line situations, and it was one of those plays where we always talked about scoring on it. And he said he never had a person go 99, and I told him I was going to be the first to do it.
Broderick, better memory for you, man, that 99-yard one or punching it in against Texas A&M and going over the top of the Aggies in 2011.
Ah, man. Oh, that's tough. I never even thought about that. I had the same feeling on both scores.
Broderick, catch us up a little bit. What have you been doing since the end of your playing time at Arkansas, and what led you to get into coaching right now?
Man, I've actually been all around. So I tried the professional thing. I had a chance to go down to Tampa Bay. A lot of people didn't know. I was a free agent. I went down to the mini camp. I came in the same time Doug Martin came in, and was killing it down there and tore my calf muscle. So obviously, with it being a business, I got released, came back, and was trying to figure out my life. Didn't have a clue. So I talked to my best friend, Brian Moffitt, who's coaching at Joe D. Robinson right now. Sat down with me, and he was like, "Hey, you know what? Man, I think you should coach. You know, I think that's your calling." And I was like, "Think so?" And I was like, "I mean, I've always wanted to." I was like, "Let me try it." So I did it. I loved it. Everything was great, but I wasn't certified. And so, you know, it was tough financially. And I felt like I needed to get away, cause try to make some money and, you know, start my life and get going. And so I did that. I moved up, got in transportation, and went to J.B. Hunt for a little bit, went to Tyson the last couple of years. And all that time I was doing it, I just knew in my heart, I was like, this is not where I'm supposed to be. You know, I was like, I'm supposed to be, you know, impacting the youth and preparing the kids for the future and giving back and, you know, being that mentor, father figure, and, you know, being around the kids, supporting them, loving them. And, you know, I know that's what I'm supposed to do in my heart. I know that's my purpose and my passion. And I said, all right, this is the year. If I can find a job or school that believes in me and that'll give me an opportunity, I'm making it happen. And so I'm at Central Junior High. Love the administration. Just from the time I interviewed and the time I met all the coaches and administration, and, you know, I felt received, and, you know, they loved me, and we all knew it was a good fit, and I'm excited to get started.
Do you remember that moment where you finally took the leap of faith? Sounds like you put a lot of thought into it, but when was that moment you finally said, all right, I'm leaving the trucking world or a professional life, and I'm getting in to coaching and doing that full time? Do you remember that sentinel moment there for you?
I've had several over the years. I mean, I from random times where I go to a game to go tailgate, and, you know, and I talk to someone and they say, "Yeah, man, what are you up to nowadays? Haven't seen you in a while. What are you coaching somewhere?" You know, like, I know you were coaching at Joe D. Robinson, and instantly my heart would hurt because I knew where I was supposed to be. I knew what I was supposed to be doing. And I see another person, they say, "Yeah, man, what are you doing nowadays, man? Are you coaching somewhere?" And so every time I heard that, I just knew that, man, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I know my calling, and it's not here. And I love my job, and, you know, I love the people at the company, but I just knew where I was supposed to be. And just after being out for so long and missing it and seeing the kids, and, you know, even times I go back up to Joe T. Robinson, there were still kids around who I coached before. And they say, "Coach Green, you need to get back in the coach, man. Coach Green, man, come back down here, man. There's O.T. Robinson and Little Rock. Come, you know, Coach Green." Like, and so knowing that I left that much of an impact in a year-ish, year and a half, pretty much as a volunteer, not even a really certified coach, I was like, hey, think of what I could do being certified and actually being there full-time every day in their lives and being, like I said, that mentor, father figure that prepares them for life on and off the field.
Product, when you look around and see some of your teammates, Ryan Mallett's in the coaching, Joe Adams in the coaching, there's probably some more that we don't know about. But it's I think it's a testament to what you guys had as teammates, and that, you know, the love of the game. And that's what I saw on the teams that were winning, how much y'all loved football and loved each other.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got to do your heart good to see all your teammates back in coaching.
Oh, yeah, it's exciting. I'm very happy for Joe. You know, I'm very happy for Mallett. I actually talked to both of them recently. And, yeah, I mean, like I said, it was great to see guys giving back and doing what they love and being happy and being passionate about it. And, like I said, I think it's great for the state as well, and it's great for recruiting. And, you know, we can steer these guys back to university. We can try to keep the guys in state, you know, show them what it's like to play for us and to stay at home. And, you know, it's such a big picture.
Roger Green, former Razorback, current Springdale Harbor Junior High running backs coach with us on the Morning Rush. Roger, we're talking about coaching. You played for one of the best, Kevin Kelly. What conversations have you had with him about the coaching side of things with football?
Oh, Coach Kelly's a guy, you know, like I said, we've always stayed in contact. We've been close from the moment we met when I was a kid, because my brother played at Blast Academy before I did. And, yeah, we've just been close. He's always looked out for me. Any kind of advice I need, whether it be sports, on the field, off the field, you know, he was like, hey, I'm here for you. You know, whatever you need, whether it be the offensive side of the ball, defense side of the ball, special teams, doesn't matter. Like, you know, and, you know, he was just there, very supportive, spoke highly of me as far as a recommendation. Like I said, I know he'd do anything for me. And, you know, I'm just blessed to be in this position. I'm excited, man. I can't wait to get started.
Let's go back to high school, Broderick. Originally, you started out your career at USC, came back to Arkansas. Take us back to your decision-making and becoming a Trojan at first, and then why you eventually decided to come home and be a Razorback.
You know, man, I just, at the time, I didn't feel as if I was wanted here in the state. A lot of stuff went on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't know about, but me and Coach didn't get along at the time. And I felt I was wanted more at USC. Coach Carroll put in a lot more effort. He came down here to see me and, you know, got back with me. He said, P offered me a scholarship right away. And, you know, at the time, Arkansas offered me like 25th. And I was expecting them to be my first offer. And, you know, Coach Malzahn was pretty much the only coach that was recruiting me hardcore and wanted me to come here and actually just laying it all out on the line. But the rest of the staff wasn't so sure about me. And knowing that, I wasn't going to go to a place where I wasn't wanted. And so I decided to go out of state. But while I was there, I was having success. A lot of people thought, oh, he's transferring. He's not going to play. He's stacked behind all these running backs. I was actually second string as a freshman. And I broke my foot my freshman year, but had a lot of stuff going on back home. My grandmother was having issues. She's still alive. Had a couple of health issues. My mom was going through a bad divorce at the time. My uncle had a bad car accident, was injured pretty bad, had to use the jaws of life to get him out. You know, several broken ribs, bleeding internally. It was just so much going on. And, you know, at 19 years old, and I'm way in, you know, Los Angeles, I just kept thinking about home. I had so much going on, and my grandmother, you know, my grandmother raised me. She's like my mom, and I love her to death, and I didn't want anything to happen, and I wanted to be home. I wanted to be there for her. I wanted to be there to support her and help her, and I was like, if this is my opportunity to go back and do those things, I'm gone. So I left for the bigger picture. It was for my family because I'm family-oriented. And it wasn't about my career. It wasn't about going to the NFL, all that. I knew I could do that anywhere I played. And so I wanted to go home, be with my family, take care of her. And I had a chance to do that.
Broderick, you just walked through a lot of things that were going on in your life at the age of 19. And then you got the outside sports media and the fans and message boards not understanding all that. What's it like as a player to be in the middle of people speculating about why you're doing things and they don't know that your uncle's in a car crash, your mom's going through a divorce? And personally, what's it like going through things of that nature when people don't have all the story?
It's tough, especially as a kid at 19. Like I said, you know, you have to have thick skin, you know. And my mom prepped me very well because she's very tough. She always, you know, talked to me about the games. Most of the time, it wasn't even immediate. It was if I didn't have a good enough game, she was on me about not running hard enough and not scoring enough touchdowns and, you know, not breaking that last tackle to score. And, you know, so I was pretty prepped from her. So I was able to handle it. Yeah. But I know a lot of other players who probably couldn't handle it if they were in my position at that time. It's definitely tough for a kid, though. A lot of kids are sensitive nowadays. And, you know, and if you're not prepped well or you don't have that support system, it's, you know, it's really tough to overcome situations like that.
Broderick, talking about toughness, kind of go through what it was like to play for Bobby Petrino, because that's one tough man.
Oh, man, he is one tough man. The total opposite of Pete Carroll, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
oh,
I bet.
Man, Pete was so happy-go-lucky, just energy every day and excited. And the first day I got to Arkansas, I'll never forget. I was in the meeting room, he walked in, and he was like, I need everybody to sit up in your chairs, don't say anything, and get your eyes on me. And I was like, oh, this is boot camp. I was like, here we go. And so, you know, he's hard-nosed, great coach. He's fun. You know, he likes what he likes, you know. And if it's not done the way he wants it to be done, you're doing it over. He's all about perfection. He's all about muscle memory. And, you know, I know he gets a bad rap for a lot of things, but, you know, actually, I felt he made me an even better player, you know, and just knowing that, like I said, when I'm sprinting out and I'm running a stretch route or swing on my third step, I'm looking back at the quarterback and the ball should be coming to my hand, you know, and just he was so detail-oriented on the little things and, you know, so just carrying that over with me, you know, into everyday life. And even now, you know, as a coach myself, it's going to help me be a better coach. And it helps me be a better player at the time.
I heard him say one time, don't ever turn down a hit. And I think he was referencing a running back that might have run out of bounds. I never saw you turn down a hit.
Oh, no. I almost cursed when you said that. No, I was just kidding. No, I've never avoided hits, man. I've always loved contact. And people always ask me, they say, all right, man, what was the hardest hit you've ever taken, man? Who was the person that just made the most contact? And I'm like, nobody.
Broderick Green with us, former Razorback on the Morning Rush. Broderick, kind of on the note of Coach Petrino and his coaching style, I think it was Chris Gragg that was talking about that you got to a point where you hated him because of how much of a tyrant he was, but that caused you guys to come more together as a team, and it caused you to kind of like come together in a sense and like, well, we better start winning or this guy's going to be on us and wear us out. How much did that factor into you guys really becoming that football team really in that era?
That was a lot of it. Like I said, we, you know, at one point, I mean, obviously we were young at the time, we were kids, we didn't understand, you know, we felt like we were all we had at one point. And it was like, hey, you know, we made it a competition where it was like, okay, it's players versus the coaches. Like, we're going to show them that we know our plays. We're going to show them that everybody's going to do everything right. We're going to show them that we're going to be perfect. We're going to show them that, you know, we can compete with them, and we want them to try to think we're going to mess up on something, and we're going to do it right every time. And we're going to support each other if someone messes up. We're going to keep the head up. We're going to keep the energy going. So we had guys keeping the energy going, offensive guys supporting offensive guys, defensive guys supporting both sides, special teams, you know, and we just became this big family from everything we were going through, and it developed a very strong support system.
Broderick, does it frustrate you to see where the team in? Because, I mean, you were part of a pretty good era of Arkansas football. Does it irritate you as a former player that put in all that hard work, all the blood, sweat, and tears to see where the program has fallen to this point?
Yeah, it's frustrating, you know, but I mean, I'm not going to blame the guys, you know, as far as the coaches and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's been a lot of rotation, a lot of in and out, you know, coach for here a year or two, coach for 2-3 years, out, coach for three, you know. So we haven't had that consistency as far as one coach in a system, being around the guys, recruiting, you know, developing players, the whole nine. So it's like when we can get that, I think we'll get a chance to try to get the ball rolling again and, you know, kind of get back to where we were. So, I mean, it's going to take time. You know, some fans have to understand that you can't be unrealistic. You can't force anything. You can't expect it all right now. I mean, you know, not that it's impossible, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, you don't just come in with a brand new coach and win 10 games, you know. I mean, it takes time. You got to get to know your personnel. You got to implement the correct style of coaching and, you know, game plans and, You got to see what you got, you know, what you need to recruit. Like, you know, so it's a lot to take on as far as a new coach and stuff like that. But I actually had a chance to meet Coach Pittman, great guy, definitely a player's coach. I didn't know much about him, but I was hearing certain things from players I played with that hung around towards the end and, you know, was here during the Bielema times. And, you know, like I said, I believe in him. I'm confident in him. And, you know, I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Hey, Clay brought it up earlier about Joe Adams back and coaching at CAC. We mentioned Ryan Mallett. Yeah. He's at Mountain Home. Ty Story's over at Bentonville West System. Drew Morgan's in Oklahoma coaching. Bray Cook, we had on last week. He's at Pea Ridge. Why do you think, particularly in this offseason, there's been so many former Razorbacks in the last few years get into coaching in high school in Arkansas?
You know, I think coaching is one of those things that, you know, a lot of players want to do, especially, you know, after sports, if they have that opportunity. Like I said, man, I mean, it's a great way to just be around the kids and, you know, to be around the environment, to stay home, to, you know, help build programs, to help prepare kids for the future. And, you know, it's a rewarding feeling, you know. And like I said, I've done it before, even as a volunteer, to know that I made an impact. You know, it feels great when you got a player that comes up to you after practice. Like, for example, I coached T.J. Hammonds when I was at Joe T. Robinson. And he come up to me and he said, "Hey, Coach Green, like, what do I need to work on? Like, what do I need to do?" And so after practice, he come up to me and I said, "Hey, okay, let's go over your steps. You know, let's go over your footwork on this. Okay, hey, let's, you know, make sure you're carrying the ball the correct way. Let's make sure, you know, you're reading the press to cut back." You know, and so I was showing him different things. And, you know, once I had him bought in, you know, like I said, players will do anything for you. You get them to buy in, show them you care about them, show them that you want them to do well and excel in life, you got them.
Broderick, last question before we let you go. We have Tyler Wilson on from time to time. I know you guys are buddies. What's your favorite Tyler Wilson story?
There's so many. Actually, I mean, I'll tell a little small story that no one knows. And I was kind of, you know, I was like, wow, this is, never knew Tyler was like this. Actually, when I first transferred in, me and him, we knew each other from playing each other in the state championship and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't know him very well. So when I first transferred in here, he was the first guy to actually kind of take me in. He was like, "Hey, man, you know, I know you don't know all the players as well and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and you're learning the offense, man. If you need any questions, you know, if you got any questions or need any help with anything, and you know, man, I, you know, love to help you and stuff." He goes, "Hey, man, let's go out, you know, get some lunch or something, and you know, just kind of talk and break down everything." And so as soon as I got here, we got together and went out to lunch and talked about life and just, you know, from high school to when I got back here, and, you know, introduced me to other players that I didn't know, and went to lunch and talked about the offense and just kind of helped me get acclimated with everything. So, yeah, man, Tyler's a great guy. He's one of my boys. And we normally stay in contact. And I see him here and there time to time when he's in Fayetteville or when I'm in Little Rock. I haven't talked to him in a while, though. But, yeah, man, that's one of my boys.
Broderick Green, former Arkansas running back, Central Warriors running back coach up there at Harbor Junior High. Broderick, thanks for making some time for us on the Morning Rush, man.
No problem, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.